Today on the Political Theory of Everything, we will be giving you your daily dose of news for today's date, Thursday, September 16th. To start off our news today, we have an article from the Daily Wire titled, "Americans Still Trapped at Mazar-e-Sharif Airport in Afghanistan, Taliban Not Cooperating, According to the Biden State Department." And the article starts, "The Biden administration has said very little about the efforts to extract Americans and Afghan allies from Afghanistan after President Joe Biden's self-imposed timeline caused a hasty withdrawal, stranding perhaps thousands of individuals behind enemy lines. Two Qatar Airlines flights left Kabul, Afghanistan late last week, but the Biden administration and others were mum over whether the Americans on those flights included a number of individuals who had previously been trapped awaiting an airlift from a non-governmental organization at Mazar-e-Sharif Airport. The State Department now says that they were not, and says the Taliban is not helping facilitate their evacuation." I'm shocked by that. Why the Taliban wouldn't help us out? Aren't you just absolutely shocked by that fact? That the Taliban, an enemy that we've been fighting, doesn't want to help us. Interesting. I would not expect that to happen. State Department spokesperson Ned Price told reporters Wednesday that the Biden administration has, quote, pulled every lever available, end quote, but that the Taliban still refuses to allow the flights to leave the ground. So a lot's been happening in Afghanistan lately. You have American helicopters being used by the Taliban to hang people from them and carry them around Afghanistan in public. You have obviously that right there, where shockingly the Taliban isn't helping us let people out. And then you have the drone bombing that was done that successfully killed an aide and then a bunch of kids and a family. So far, the handling of Afghanistan has been absolutely superb. I don't think anyone could have done it better. But it's quite a mess over there right now, and it continues to get worse and worse, especially with the fact that according to the, I forget if it was the State Department website, but apparently the people flying back from Afghanistan are being told they have to pay around $2,000 a person. So at that point, you know, would you rather pay $2,000 and fly back or hang out with the Taliban, who just got $84 billion worth of equipment from the United States government? I mean, it's a really hard debate at this point what you would rather do. Because, I mean, one of them is supported by the U.S. government, got money from them indirectly, basically. All the other ones, you have to pay them $2,000, you know? It's like, I don't know what's the better choices at this point. But anyways, the article continues and talks about the international flights and how many are going to be going on. And that other countries, like Britain and them, are still going in and taking their own citizens out. I know that there are past, like Navy SEALs and such, who are going in, basically funding themselves, going into Afghanistan and attempting to evacuate Americans that way. The guy who killed Osama bin Laden went on the TV recently and talked about how he would be perfectly fine with going into Afghanistan right now and saving a bunch of people, as would everybody else in the military besides the leaders. So that's the wonderful situation that's devolving in Afghanistan. When talked about, the White House and others interviewed, the press conferences quickly changed subjects. One of them changed the subject to North Korea, and the reporter who asked the question did not care. So it continues on with a bunch of quotes in this article about the State Department spokesperson, Ned Price, talking to reporters. And basically other countries that are trying to do something about it, which they aren't doing anything. Well, they can't really, because they won't use force at all. So this is what Ned Price told someone, quote, "We have been very clear that the individuals who have expressed the desire and willingness to leave via Mazar-e-Sharif should be allowed to leave the country there. The fact that, to my knowledge, a charter flight has not departed from Mazar has nothing to do with anything that the State Department has or has not done, and in fact, quite the contrary," end quote. So, quote, "We have gone to extraordinary lengths with not only our engagement with the Taliban, but also these other constellations of groups on the ground and operating from afar, very afar." Oh, sorry, that wasn't in the quote. Whoops. "And also with other countries in the region and to our minds, these flights, these individuals, there's no reason they should not be able to depart, and that's why we're continuing to focus on, and that's what we're continuing to focus on, end quote. So they're just confused why the Taliban isn't happily letting them fly out of the airport. Has there been a war there recently or something? Like, have they been fighting the Taliban in America?
So.
Is that why they're mad?
Or? I don't think so.
Yeah, obviously it's not. I don't think they've been fighting for 20 years. So that's probably why. Then in that case, I don't think why the Taliban has any reason to be angry. I think they should be.
No, I think the Taliban is doing everything right.
they have no reason to be angry. I think the Pentagon has a great point. Why aren't they just letting them fly? That's a great point. I mean, there hasn't been any battles recently in Afghanistan. At least in the past 20 years, there hasn't been, right? I don't know. Taliban's acting weird, I suppose. It could not be the U.S. government being pathetic. No, definitely not.
No, it can't be the U.S. government bowing down to a terrorist organization.
Oh, totally not that. Totally. But until we get more news on that, we're going to move towards our next article.
The next article for today's news is from CNN and titled Timeline of Missing 22-Year-Old Gabby Petito's Case. Local and federal authorities are looking for 22-year-old Gabby Petito, who was reported missing by her family over the weekend after she had been traveling with her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. Quite a last name.
That is an interesting last name.
Laundrie returned to the pair's Northport, Florida home earlier this month without Petito and is now refusing to talk to authorities, police have stated. Petito's family and their attorneys have pleaded with Laundrie and his family to cooperate and help bring the girl home. An attorney for Laundrie's family said in a Tuesday statement, his family is remaining in the background at this juncture and will have no further comment on the advice of counsel. So, lawyers doing their job as usual.
Yeah.
Petito is white, about 5'5 and 110 pounds, with blonde hair, blue eyes, and several tattoos, including one on her finger, one on her forearm that reads, "Let it be." The FBI has set up a national hotline, 1-800-CALL-FBI, to receive any tips. Here's what we know about the timeline in the case of Gabby Petito. In June, Northport Police Chief Todd Garrison said in a Thursday news briefing that Petito and Laundrie embarked on a cross-country trip in June. They planned to travel in Petito's white Ford van to the West Coast and visit state national parks across the western United States. She had been excited to share her journey with her family and others on social media, he said. She maintained regular contact with her family members during their travels. However, that communication abruptly stopped around the end of August. So she made it through June and July communicating with her family members. And then August 12th, the couple were in Moab, Utah, and they encountered police, where the officers described them as having engaged in some sort of altercation. Although the two were described as getting into a physical fight, both the male and female reported that they are in love and engaged to be married and desperately didn't wish to see anyone charged with a crime, a report from Officer Eric Pratt. An officer suggesting the couple separate for the night, the report said, which described Petito as confused and emotional. After evaluating the totality of the circumstances, I do not believe the situation escalated to the level of domestic assault as much as that of a mental health crisis, Officer Daniel Robbins wrote in the police report. The couple each had their cell phones in case of emergency, so nothing out of the ordinary there, probably just couples fighting. And then the last week of August came, and Petito's family told police they were last in contact with her during the last week of August. Before the last communication, Petito is believed to have been in Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. In a Thursday news conference, Petito family attorney Richard Shefford said, the family's last communication with Petito was August 30th, but they do not believe the message they received was from Petito herself. He declined to share what the message said or why they did not believe it was her writing. That was a while. That was 2 weeks ago, and they believe it wasn't even her that messaged their family. And then on September 1st, her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, returned to their Northport home, according to police, where his parents also lived. And the white vehicle they were driving was later recovered by police at that home. It was processed, and there was some material in there that authorities will be going through. And then a couple days ago, on September 11th, after not being able to get in touch with her Petito's family, who lives in New York, reported her missing. And Northport authorities in Florida went to Laundrie's home on Saturday night, asking to speak to him and his family, but we were essentially handed the information for their attorney, Taylor said. So it sounded like Laundrie and his family were already prepared for the police to arrive at their doorstep.
Yeah. It's interesting that he doesn't want to talk about it. You would think he would.
Yeah, you would think he'd be very upset that his fiance has gone missing.
Yeah, so obviously, I guess they maybe think it's him. Based off this the way this article's set up, they definitely suspect, CNN at least,
suspects it's Laundrie or Laundrie's family. Yeah.
Has some relation to it, to it happening.
And lastly, the article states on September 16th, Petito's family attorney stated, if you or your family have any decency left, please tell us where Gabby is located. Moving on to the next article.
From CBS News, title, where Afghan refugees are expected to be settled or resettled by state. So, article starts, a handful of states, including California and Texas, are set to receive a proportionate number of the tens of thousands of Afghans evacuated to the U.S., while other states are expected to resettle fewer than a dozen evacuees, or not at all, according to government data obtained by CBS News. The Biden administration this week notified state authorities of the number of Afghan refugees each state could receive in the coming weeks as part of the first phase of a massive resettlement operation that is slated to be placed that place nearly 37,000 refugees from Afghanistan in U.S. communities. California is expected to receive 5,225 Afghan refugees, the most of any state. Texas is set to receive 4,481 Afghans, followed by Oklahoma, which is expected to host 1,800 evacuees. Washington State and Arizona are each slated to receive more than 1,600. The other states set to receive more than 1,000 Afghan evacuees during the first resettlement phase are Maryland, Michigan, Virginia, Missouri, New York, Georgia, North Carolina, and Florida, according to the government statistics that were first reported by the Associated Press. Alabama, Arkansas, Delaware, Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, and North Dakota are all set to resettle fewer than 100 Afghans. Alabama and Mississippi are expected to receive just 10 evacuees. Hawaii, Wyoming, West Virginia, and South Dakota are not currently slated to get any of them. The 37,000 Afghans expected to be resettled in communities across the United States in the coming weeks form a subset of a larger number of evacuees from Afghanistan who have been relocated to the United States. As of Wednesday morning, there were more than 53,000 of Afghan evacuees at 8 military installations across the U.S. mainland that are serving as temporary housing sites while the new arrivals complete immigration paperwork as well as vaccination against measles and COVID-19, according to internal data obtained by CBS News. Other Afghans who were airlifted from Kabul and taken to the U.S. did not go to the military sites because their immigration paperwork had been completed abroad. 12,000 evacuees remained at military sites in Germany, Spain, Italy, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar as of Wednesday morning and awaiting U.S. security vetting and immigration processing. So that's basically all the news there. It continues on about a bunch of other things about the Afghans and like Congress and legalization of certain parts for them to get in. But until then, we move on to our next article.
The next article is from Fox News and it's about America's favorite female rapper, Nicki Minaj. The title of the article is Nicki Minaj Tweets Spark Protests Outside CDC Headquarters. Nicki Minaj's tweets expressing her reservations about taking the COVID-19 vaccine prompted a group of her fans, which I'm pretty sure are known as Barbies, launched a protest outside the CDC headquarters in Atlanta on Wednesday, with one outspoken supporter insisting, "We should all question this vaccine." So it took Nicki Minaj, a celebrity, for people to start questioning this vaccine. Just to me, is not the best. The demonstrators, who all wore masks and medical gloves, chanted, "Nicki Minaj told me the truth. Fauci lied to me," according to footage taken by WGCL-TV. Minaj said earlier this week via Twitter that she had not yet taken the jab and was still researching whether to get vaccinated. She also made waves by telling fans that her cousin's friend in Trinidad experienced impotence and swollen testicles after receiving a coronavirus vaccine, a claim that numerous politicals and health officials dismissed. Critics accused the rapper of spreading misinformation about COVID-19 with a claim regarding her cousin's friend's purported reaction to the vaccine. But Twitter said it saw no violation of its rules in her posts. MSNBC's Joy Reid lambasted the rapper on the air over her tweets. Minaj saw the clip on Twitter and fired back, accusing the liberal host of spreading a false narrative about black woman, about a black woman, and calling Reid a lying, homophobic person. I can't say the other word. On Thursday, Minaj vowed to never use Twitter again after saying that she was in Twitter jail, a claim the company denied. Meanwhile, Minaj signaled that Fox News' Tucker Carlson was spot on in his assessment of the situation. Tucker Carlson explained on his show regarding the uproar, "It's not anything to do with the physical effect of the vaccine that makes our political class mad. It's the last part of Nicki Minaj's tweet that enraged them. The part where she says you should pray on it and make the decision for yourself like a free human being. Quote, don't be bullied," end quote. Nidu Abad, a behavioral scientist at the CDC, emphasized to WGCL that people should rely on the advice of trusted medical professionals regarding their health and not celebrities. Abad told the outlet, "Throughout this pandemic, we have urged platforms small and big to take care of what they are conveying around COVID-19 vaccines because we know that can be impactful around people's behavior."
Huh, okay. So, interesting that they fire back at Nicki Minaj, of all people. That's the person they address for her choice on not getting vaccinated.
Yep.
Apparently the reason she didn't go to Met Gala or whatever it is, is actually because of her kid. Like, she originally didn't want to go because she has her, like, young boy or something like that. And the outlets automatically turned that into she didn't want to get vaccinated, which maybe that was, like, a side reason. But she did say, like, previous to the Met Gala, she's like, "I'm not going because of this." So interesting uproar against, once again, America's favorite female rapper, Nicki Minaj. But moving on, we now have an article from The Blaze. The title of this one, 24 GOP attorneys, attorney generals sign letter threatening legal action over Biden's vaccine and testing mandate for large employers. So 24 state attorneys, attorney generals have signed a letter opposing the Biden administration's plan to require employers with 100 or more employees to have workers get vaccinated against COVID-19 or get tested weekly. Quote, "We thus urge you to reconsider your unlawful and harmful plan and allow people to make their own decisions," end quote. So the 24 Republican Republican officials wrote their letters to the president saying, quote, "If your administration does not alter its course, the undersigned state attorney generals will seek every available legal option to hold you accountable and uphold the rule of law," end quote. That's all that's been, like, released so far on that topic. Obviously, no response yet because, one, what White House would ever respond to it? So there's that part, but also the Biden administration would not like to address the issue that they brought up. But the attorney generals who signed it were from Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Texas, Utah, West Virginia, and Wyoming. The quote, "The Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, is developing a rule that will require all employers with 100 or more employees to ensure their workforce is fully vaccinated or require any workers who remain unvaccinated to produce a negative test result on at least a weekly basis before coming to work," end quote, according to the White House. So the OSHA will do this by using a, quote, "emergency temporary standard ETS to implement this requirement," end quote. So far, 63.5% of the U.S. population ages 12 and older have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, while 74.2% of that demographic has received at least one dose, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Basically, the people say that it's the attorney generals are saying that, quote, the edict is also illegal, end quote. Arizona has already lodged a legal challenge against federal vaccine mandates, pointing out that aliens who unlawfully enter the United States are not forced to get COVID-19 vaccinations. That's basically all for the article. But that's the biggest topic, I think. One of the biggest topics this week is the vaccine mandate that Biden suddenly came out with after promising he wouldn't do previous to his campaign, or previous to his presidency during his campaign. He also said that it's unconstitutional and that he can't do that as a president, but we've seen him do that with other things as well. So no surprise there. But that's basically what's happening in the White House. The White House is having quite a bit of trouble this week. And well, frankly, since they got in the White House, but especially in the past few weeks, starting from the beginning of their presidency with the XL pipeline and continuing on into Afghanistan. And now you have something pop up this week, which is going to lead us into our final article.
The final article is from the Daily Wire, and the title is Angry and Bitter, France Snubs Biden, Cancels Gala Celebrating U.S.-French Relationship. Just from the title of the article, you can tell it's going to be grim. France canceled a gala celebrating French-U.S. relations after the Biden administration cut France out of a defense agreement with Australia, angering French officials. A gala celebrating the 240th anniversary of the Battle of the Capes was set to take place Friday evening at the French Embassy in Washington, D.C., and in a French frigate in Baltimore. French officials furious at the Biden administration for undercutting a 2016 French agreement with Australia scrapped the events Thursday, according to the New York Times. So it sounds like that French agreement was under the Trump administration, and then the Biden administration came in and just cut it out. On Wednesday, the United States, Britain, and Australia announced a three-way military alliance to help Australia combat Chinese aggression in the region. The U.S. and Britain agreed to support Australia and aid it in building a fleet of nuclear-powered submarines. The three countries will also trade information on key technological advancements in areas such as artificial intelligence and long-range strike capabilities. French officials reacted angrily to the deal and accusing the United States of stabbing it in the back for cutting France out of the deal and undermining a 2016 agreement France had negotiated with Australia. In 2016, France agreed to supply Australia with a fleet of diesel-powered submarines. While that deal is now defunct with the new U.S.-UK-Australian agreement, French officials have promised a legal battle over the 2016 deal, and I can assure you that legal battle will take years to complete. France's heads of foreign relations and defense both ripped U.S. President Joe Biden and the United States over the new agreement. As the Daily Wire reported, this brutal, unilateral, and unpredictable decision reminds me a lot of what Mr. Trump used to do. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told France Info Radio, according to Reuters, "I am angry and bitter. This isn't done between allies. It's a stab in the back. We created a relationship of trust with Australia, and that trust has been broken." Le Drian released a joint statement along with the French Minister of Armed Forces, Florence Parly, slamming the United States. "The American decision, which leads to the exclusion of a European ally and partner like France from a crucial partnership with Australia at a time when we are facing unprecedented challenges in the Indo-Pacific region, be it over our values or respect for multilateralism based on the rule of law, signals a lack of consistency, which France can only notice and regret," the official said, according to Politico. The defense agreement is the latest in a string of Biden decisions that have left U.S. allied feeling angry and alienated. The United States rushed withdrawal out of Afghanistan strained U.S. relationships among NATO allies, who petitioned Biden to keep troops in Afghanistan until evacuations could be completed. Biden denied the request, abiding by Taliban commands to keep to Biden's own self-imposed deadline of August 31st. Earlier this year, Biden received furious reactions from Canadian officials after he pulled a permit for the Keystone Pipeline across from Canada into the United States, effectively killing the project. The Daily Wire reported, "While we welcome the president's commitment to fight climate change, we are disappointed but acknowledge the president's decision to fulfill his election campaign promise on the Keystone XL," Trudeau said in a statement, according to the New York Post. Canada is the single largest supplier of energy to the United States. I did not know that. Contributing to U.S. energy security and economic competitiveness and supporting thousands of jobs on both sides of the border, he continued. Workers in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and across Canada will always have our support. Alberta Premier Jason Kenney said he was deeply disturbed by Biden's decision to stop work on the $8 billion project. Kenney had threatened legal action earlier in the week after reports of Biden's intent to kill the pipeline surfaced. This is a gut punch for the Canadian and Alberta economies. Sadly, it is an insult directed at the United States, most important ally and trading partner, Kenney told the news conference, according to Reuters.
So, lots of people mad. You got France, you got NATO, and you have Canada. And then you also had Britain for when people were basically getting stranded in Afghanistan. The White House and the Pentagon said that they have zero capabilities of going back in to save them. People stranded there. Meanwhile, Britain and France are able to send their special teams in, their special operations in to save those. But somehow, America, who's supposed to be the best military, can't do it, but weaker militaries can. That makes no sense. But that's where Britain and them, that's part of the NATO, but Britain is also getting pissed off. And that's where Biden said, oh yeah, we called them about it, they're not mad at all. And then they actually hadn't called them yet, which we've talked about previously. And then when they did call, Britain absolutely rips at them for their decision on leaving so abruptly and poorly, leaving multiple people behind and basically letting the Taliban run over America and frankly embarrass America by having to follow the Taliban for every single thing that the Taliban wanted. Versus America saying, no, we're the dominant force here, don't make us basically reassert our dominance upon you. But that's pretty much all the news that we have for today. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your Thursday and a wonderful rest of your week and weekend. Thank you so much for listening.